What's up, Gator Nation? Zach Albaverde here, and welcome to the latest Gators Online show. I am joined this week by Joe Cook from Inside Texas to preview the Florida-Texas game on Saturday in Austin. Been over 100 years since these two teams met in Austin. One, I think that both fans on each side have been looking forward to since the schedule came out. Joe, appreciate you joining us this week, man. How's it going?
It's great. It's real exciting. You know, I think when all these different teams that Texas was playing was announced in 2023 or even before that, like this is one that there was a lot of excitement for just because there's only been three previous matchups. The teams don't see each other very often. And so, you know, you talk about the helmets that are going to be on the field. And this was one of those ones that Texas fans are really looking forward to. And it's finally here. Can't wait to see it.
No doubt. 11 a.m. local kick for those that will be there in Austin. 12 p.m. This game will be on ABC. And we'll get into the matchup, some players to watch, some key things to Saturday's game. But I do want to get just kind of an early outlook from Joe on how the season has gone so far for Texas. They're ranked number 5 in the college football playoff rankings, coming off of a loss to Georgia, but have also had some impressive wins this season. Your take on the team so far?
Yeah, first of all, the defense may be one of the best that the program's seen this century. And I know that there are probably a lot of people who look at who the teams that Texas has played, even the quarterbacks they've played. You know, the Alex Orgie, Davis Warren thing up at Michigan. You even look at the Mississippi State thing with Van Buren. But then you look at Carson Beck, and just like the Gators are able to do, they're able to turn him over. The only real success that Georgia had against Texas and even other opponents like Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt, it's all come on short fields. So that's been the key for Texas is, you know, their defense has answered every single call. Even when there are short fields or, you know, good field position for opponents, they've been able to do some great things. One of the best in stop rates, you know, total defense being what it is. I know they're up there. Yards per play, I know that they're up there as well. And it's not just stopping the run, it's stopping the pass. So the defense has been one of the best I've seen covering Texas, and I've been on this beat since 2016. The offense is solid. As I think a lot of college football fans will know, Texas lost its starting running back in C.J. Baxter out of the Orlando area during preseason camp. One of the guys who was supposed to be maybe depth and then maybe rise into a better role, and Christian Clark was lost as well for the season. So they've had to rely on some guys who are kind of speed backs at the running game with Jaden Blue, Quintravion Wisner. And then they have a freshman who's a power back, I guess, but he's not powerful in pass protection. And Jarrett Gibson from Gainesville, who's not really done a lot this season outside of the Michigan game. So and then you look at the pass game, Quinn Ewers, you know, the term to know for Texas fans these past couple weeks since the bye was average depth of target. A lot of fans know about Steve Sarkisian and how he'll use, kind of like Billy Napier, use the play action run to set up deep shots. Quinn's average depth of target, you know, despite being, you know, this number one overall prospect a few years ago, NIL darling, Fansville deputy, there's still a lot to be desired from Quinn Ewers. And that's not to say that there's anything to see with Arch Manning, you know, maybe taking his spot this week or there being a two quarterback system. But the fans at Texas, they can get angsty when they've got the types of quarterbacks they have. But then you look at everything else, the offensive line, great in pass protection, a lot of weapons at wide receiver, maybe one of the best tight ends in the country in Gunnar Helm. A lot of it overcomes a shaky special teams or comparatively shaky. But through it all, Texas is 7-1, 3-1 in conference play, and like you said, number 5 in the playoff rankings.
Yeah, it's been an impressive start to the season for the Longhorns, and as we mentioned, debuted at number 5 in the college football playoff rankings this week. Before we get a little bit more into this matchup, I want to encourage all Florida fans out there and Longhorns fans listening as well to go check out Roback. .com. For those who aren't familiar with Roback, they're completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. They just released their newly licensed game day collection, and it is fantastic. Novel polo designs, clean hoodie, and Q-zip designs for from some of your favorite schools, including the Gators. It's definitely worth checking out. Nobody else on the market is pairing these level of custom designs with this quality of activewear. Use the code Gators20 on Roback.com for a generous 20% off all new customers this season. That's R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com. 20% off all performance polos, shirts, and more using the code Gators20. Now, Joe, you look obviously at the start to the season. You mentioned the win at Michigan. They are coming off of the loss to Georgia and a team that Florida just played very close. What were your takeaways from that game, kind of how it played out, and then what Texas had to do going into its bye week coming off that result?
The big one for me was that the offensive line got humbled a little bit. There had been some talks that offensive line was like, well, this is the best one in the country. They could pass protect against anybody. They can clear the right amount of lanes in the run game. And against another playoff caliber team, they got shown that wasn't really the case. That was Quinn Ewers' second game coming back from injury. The Oklahoma one was the first. And I think a lot of fans may have waved the Oklahoma game by him and like, you know what, he's coming off of injury, gave him time to heal, shaking off rust, all that sort of thing. But he looked bad. Like, that was a bad game. And he picked it up a little bit in the second half. But in that first half, he was bad enough to where Sark's like, all right, I need to put somebody else in and give this guy a chance. Offensive line's been fine over the past couple of weeks. It's Quinn Ewers who, you know, even though maybe some of the deep passes aren't there because of the structure of opposing defenses, he's got to be better. And he did improve to Vanderbilt. Like, he improved from his efforts facing a playoff caliber defense with Mike Williams, Jaden Walker, all those guys, to facing Vanderbilt who doesn't have those types of guys. So he did improve on that front. But now the challenge is back. So Quinn Ewers is going to have to show that he can command an offense against a very athletic Gators front and maybe a secondary that's missing some of their top flight guys, but is still very, very athletic back there as well. And has some decent amount of experience. He's going to have to show that he can coordinate an offense, including a passing offense there. As far as defense goes against Georgia, they were really, really hurt by short fields. Like, Texas had, I don't know how many total yards they had in the first half, but it was a paltry amount. The defense had to try to, you know, withstand facing 50-yard fields, 40-yard fields, and they were able to turn Carson Beck over a few times. And one of those, I think the fans can even get a little bit of maybe malign credit for with the bottles being thrown on the field on that pass interference play. But the defense, I think that proved to a lot of fans that it's the real deal. They are missing or dinged up a little bit at the safety position, but they do feel like they have a good chance of seeing a guy like Andrew Mukuba come back at the safety spot and really help this defense that's at all three levels played really solid. The one thing to watch might be the fact that they will be without a starting defensive tackle for the first half. Vernon Broughton got a targeting penalty at Vanderbilt, and as we know, I learned a few years ago, those don't even reset over the course of an off season. So over the course of a bye, he did not get that taken away. They'll start a seventh year senior most likely in his spot, and then get him for the second half. But the defense is one of the type of quality haven't seen at Texas in a good while.
And if you guys aren't familiar, Texas has the number one total defense in the country. Number two nationally scoring defense, number one passing defense, 16th nationally in rushing defense. So what Joe's talking about is right. They are very elite. A pretty interesting dynamic with Billy Napier and Steve Sarkisian this week, two guys that have worked together, have actually coached against each other as head coaches. We've heard from Billy this week about Sarkisian. What has Steve had to say about Billy? And is there anything from their past or their familiarity with each other that adds something to this matchup?
Yeah, I think if I'm right, when Sark went through his USC thing, that was in 2015, and Nick Saban threw him the lifeline in 2016, and Napier was wide receivers coach on right. that staff at Alabama. And then it's real funny, Sark's first game at Texas as head coach was against Napier at Louisiana. And that was the only loss that that Cajuns team had in 2021. And Texas lost seven games that year. So a lot going on there. Sark mentioned that they feel like he's cut from the same cloth. Lots of motions, varied personnels, that type of thing. It kind of feels like maybe with DJ Lagway, who's, you know, status being what he is, but recruiting that type of player, even going back, not to bring up old wounds, recruiting Jaden Rashada, that where Sark and Napier deviated a little bit is Napier can deal with running the quarterback or live with running the quarterback a little bit more than Sark, and that's just not something he does. Maybe that's personnel related, but even going back to like Tua and Mac, again, maybe sure. Personnel related, not their thing, but they see a lot of they see offense pretty similar. They like having got a run game to set up play action. They like motions. They like shifts. They like changing the picture for the defense. And of course, there's always that aspect of being, you know, within that Saban system. Sark, apparently, I don't know if this is how the rest of college football feels, but, you know, when covering Sark versus Saban for the past couple of years and knowing what Sark did at Tuscaloosa, you know, even being the interim head coach for that Iron Bowl where Saban had COVID, it seems like he, on the offensive side of things, which is weird to say, is like the favored son, while Kirby remains the favored son on the defensive side of things. And who knows where Lane fits in there, but maybe that's another topic for another day. So it's interesting to see just how, you know, these two guys who work for Nick Saban, heck, were, I think, successful college quarterbacks at varying levels, and yeah. Who went the had also varying paths to high major head coaching jobs, see a lot of themselves in each other, and it sounds like everything's very cordial between those two.
No doubt. Another major storyline this week is DJ Lagway, like you mentioned. By the time you guys are listening to this episode, his status may already be out there officially, although I would imagine it's going to be a game time decision. So I don't think that they're going to completely rule him as cleared or out until we get to 11 a.m. But what are your thoughts on that matchup? Texas having to prepare, I guess, for two quarterbacks this week, and I'm sure they're probably licking their chops at the potential of going up against a third string preferred walk-on quarterback if that's what happens.
Yeah, preparing for two quarterbacks isn't much new for this Texas team. Again, they had to do it at Michigan with the Davis Warren and Alex Orji thing. They saw that. They saw both in game. They had to do it a little bit with Oklahoma when they were going back and forth between Jackson Arnold and Michael Hawkins Jr. They're going to have to keep doing it. That's the thing. So, with whatever Lagway's status is, with whatever the third stringer's status is, they're going to have to do it then. They may have to do it again at Arkansas with Taylen Green and I forget his name, his last name, Malachi. May have to do it with Kentucky with Wimsett and Vandegrift. And they may have to do it with Texas A&M with Marcel Reed and Connor Weigman. But one of the big differences, as I think all y'all know, and remind me again of the third stringer's name. I've been looking him up, but
Warner.
I think DJ Lagway has a better arm than him. So that's going to dictate a little bit about what the Gators offense is going to look like. They'll probably try to cover the run game in a pretty similar way, even with Lagway's ability. But again, are you going to use that when he's coming off this hamstring injury? So I think if Lagway is able to play, they'll respect the deep passing game a little bit more. But if not, then they're going to key in and say, like, look, buddy, this isn't the Ivy League anymore. This is the SEC. Can you throw it downfield?
Yeah, I was surprised that first snap that Aiden had in that Georgia game. He let it fly when he came into the game. So he's not scared, but this is going to be another really tough defense that he's got to face on Saturday. Again, if he indeed makes his first career start. Obviously, a lot of players on the other side that I think Florida fans want to get familiar with while we got you, Joe. Who are some guys that you would say, obviously you've mentioned some players probably already, but who are some guys that you would say could give Florida fits on Saturday in that, fans need to watch out for?
Gunnar Helm, tight end number 85. He's kind of become a favorite target for whoever's at quarterback. Second in the SEC, I think, in receiving yards behind Eli Stowers at Vanderbilt. And DeAndre Moore, who is someone that has been very great in the slot receiver position, had a couple big touchdown catches against Vanderbilt, had some touchdown catches with Arch Manning playing against Mississippi State. And with the fact that Quinn Ewers isn't looking downfield a ton, or at least not as much as fans would like, he's kind of one of those guys who's been there and been a reliable target for what Steve Sarkisian's trying to do. This one isn't sexy, but Kelvin Banks at left tackle, like, this is someone I know that there was a lot of talk about, like Will Campbell at LSU and, you know, whoever else, the right tackle at LSU, anybody else around the country, the tackles at Bama, the tackles at Tech or at Tennessee being some of the best ones. Kelvin Banks at left tackle is someone who is going to be a top 10 pick. Could even be a top five pick with the way the quarterback class is. He has been reliable, hasn't missed a game, has missed like a few snaps his whole career, and is someone who just stands up and goes at it with any edge rusher and takes on that challenge really well. I think Mykel Williams got one against them, and or maybe even two, and one of those was the fault of Quinn Ewers for just having bad pocket presence. So definitely somebody on the offensive end. It's not, like I said, not a sexy position, but there are a few who do it better than number 78. So if you're frustrated at the pass rush, you can give some credit to him. On defense, number zero, Anthony Hill. That's a guy who is not only, I think, leading the Longhorns in tackles, but also leading them in tackles for loss, leading them in sacks, and that's even from a middle linebacker position. They move him around all over, but he's someone who you can tell when you're getting tackled by Anthony Hill, and he's been one of those players who plays with his hair on fire, plays over the field. And last, I'm going to go with the secondary. It's really tough to pick one, but I'll go Jahdae Barron. I know, you know, Eugene Wilson probably being out for the year or maybe even unavailable for this game. That's a big threat that Texas is probably happy that they don't have to face. Whoever wide receiver one is for the Gators, or whoever plays on that boundary receiver side for the Gators, they're going to have Jahdae Barron lined up across from him. He's a Thorpe semifinalist. He's had a phenomenal year, had two interceptions of Carson Beck, is just one of the most reliable players. And on passing situations, you'll see him kind of slide into a Will linebacker spot and play that position. So just one of the more heady and versatile players on the Texas defense, and someone who makes passing offense really tough for opponents.
And then, Joe, you mentioned him a little bit earlier, Jarek Gibson, Gainesville, Florida native. I do think, and I don't know how much of a factor this plays into Saturday's game, but I did want to ask you about some of the recent recruiting battles that Florida and Texas have had, because it's maybe more than they typically have. I don't know if the history between Sark and Billy and maybe them going after some of the same caliber of players or same type of skill sets is why they've crossed paths so much. But Gibson obviously was a former Florida commit, and they have two other players from their 2024 class that were also committed to Florida. I think Florida fans really remember Xavier Filsimi, the five-star safety, as well as Wardell Mack, the four-star cornerback. As we all know, the Gators got DJ Lagway out of the state of Texas last year, and right now they've got Chad Gasper from the state of Texas committed to Florida. Just what do you make of some of these recruiting battles? I mean, I don't think the game Saturday will have much implications on that in the future, but and how have those guys that the Longhorns were able to get from the Gators, how have they done so far their first year?
Yeah, Gibson had a big first few games. But it became pretty evident that they just do not trust him in pass protection quite yet, which, you know, freshman running backs, that's fine. So their usage of him, once I think teams got some tape on Texas and realized that number nine wasn't on the field in passing situations, they kind of understood what was coming. But he runs hard. His nickname on the team is Baby Rhino, which tells you a little bit about what he's able to do. And you know, maybe he does get some more opportunities to play against his hometown team. It'll be interesting to see, but they really like what they have, and at least so far in Wisner and Blue, just because of what they're able to do on all three downs. Filsimi had I think he got dinged up some, because there were a couple games where he didn't suit out, wasn't on the injury report, didn't dress up. Don't think it's suspension, stuff like that. I'm curious what y'all's recollection was. He seems like someone who was one of the best athletes on any field he stepped on, but maybe recognition was going to take a little while for him. That's the story we've kind of gotten at Texas. There was another freshman named Jordan Johnson Rubel who went to IMG, who, when they went through a little injury phase at safety, he started to see a little bit more action. Filsimi's seen the field, but his years are a little bit ahead of him. And then the Wardell Mack, probably someone who fits in at the nickel position. It's kind of funny, if you go to Pro Football Focus and check Texas defense, he's the highest rated guy, but he's only been on the field for like 10 snaps. So and it's because he had an interception, I think, either against like Colorado State or somebody else, where he played it perfectly and hadn't really done a whole lot since. But someone they have a lot of confidence in the future. You know, you mentioned Lagway went to Willis High School, which I had heard a story that there's an organization in Houston, my hometown. I live in Austin, and it's called the Touchdown Club of Houston. You know, every city has their touchdown club. Willis was just too far for them to be able to give, and I think the Houston Chronicle, the hometown newspaper, to give like Houston area offensive player of the year. Kind of fits more into like where Texas A&M is, like that region of Texas.
Sure.
But you know, everybody you will come across who has anything to do with Willis, anything to do with the Lagways, will always say great things about him. I don't think Texas ever, for you know, pretty obvious reasons, they didn't get involved, because the class before, they had signed Arch Manning, and understandably, if you're the Lagways, you know the path to playing time is going to be tough. And DJ Lagway, I'm sure, sold the Anthony Richardson vision and said, "Look, give Mertz a year, and then the keys are all yours." And didn't even take that long. Sure. And I'm trying to look through the Florida roster at the same time, just to see where some of the Texas guys, or maybe even some Texas crossover, might be. The big one, the literal big one, is Damian George. And way back in 2020, when a lot of different teams were recruiting Zach Evans, who's on some NFL team right now, they were told that they're a package deal for as much as that's worth. Alabama under Saban, and I think that may have been Sark as well, got a commitment from George.
Wow.
Obviously, Zach Evans' recruitment took so many behind-the-scenes twists and turns, including when you saw him basically at the All-American game kind of begging for his spot back at Georgia. Ended up at TCU in the pros now. Trying to see if there's anybody else I can see on a quick scroll.
I forgot to mention De'Andre Robinson.
Yeah. Oh man, that was a tough loss for Texas. He had said Bo Davis was his guy, so I thought that maybe he would follow him to LSU. Didn't work out that way. That's why you're going to see Texas go big in defensive tackle in this class. I don't know if he would have played right away, but he would have been someone that they would have really, really liked. Let's see if I can find any good. I know Texas recruited Arliss Boardingham for a little while, but I think they tried to see how that went, and I think that's one of those that just fizzled out before summer official visits took place.
Well, and then, of course, Florida's other tight end, Hayden Hansen, is from Texas, so he's looking forward to this one because he said Longhorns didn't give him much of a look, which, I mean, he was a quarterback in high school, so, I mean, he was a bit of projection for the Louisiana staff at the time, which has turned out to be pretty good. But it just, you usually don't see Florida and Texas crossing paths much on the recruiting trail, but I feel like it's been a lot more lately.
Right. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, Sark and the Bama philosophy, I guess, of the state of the Southeast, with Jeff Banks having connections. And then even with guys like Tashard Choice, even though he's from Georgia, having some Southeast connections, and Kenny Baker, who is the Longhorns defensive tackles coach, having a lot of different connections. I know he's not on the roster anymore, and maybe his little brother isn't. There are no more Pouncies from Ethan and Jordan.
Yeah,
they're out of eligibility, right?
Yeah, but that was another guy that came from Texas to Florida.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was either a late flip or a late beat of Notre Dame. So there's more and more overlap now because, you know, Texas, it's always going to view the state of Texas as in-state. It's going to view Louisiana as a place where it can start to really make some hay, and it's always going to try to leverage the national brand, especially over the past couple cycles, where Florida State's been volatile, Florida's been volatile, and Miami's unfortunately just kind of coming around to it. But still, that's way down in the bottom of the state. So they feel like they can find they have a commit in Myron Charles from Florida, who's from Port Charlotte. I know I'm missing a couple, and I need to remember it. But they have definitely looked at Florida harder, more and more. Myron Charles, Jamie French, from Jacksonville Mandarin. So they're definitely starting to expand their reach a little bit more into Florida, into Georgia. Heck, their quarterback commit in this upcoming 2025 class is from Alabama, from Mobile. So they're looking everywhere, and not just within state lines.
Well, Florida's last great quarterback came from the state of Texas and Kyle Trask. So, it looks like DJ Lagway is in line to be the next one. 12 p.m. Eastern time, 11 a.m. local kick for the Gators and Longhorns. Joe, before we have you give us your keys to the game, I do want to give a shout out to MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're ready to leave the corporate rat race for the American dream, looking for a side hustle while working your current job, wanting to diversify, build wealth, and or leave a legacy, Andy can help. He's a franchise consultant as well as a franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can learn more and contact Andy anytime at MyPerfectFranchise.net or calling or texting him at 404-973-9901. As Joe mentioned earlier, this will just be the fourth meeting ever between the Gators and Longhorns, one of the new members of the SEC. A lot, I think, that we've spent so far this week writing about this game, looking at these matchups. When it comes down to Saturday, Joe, what do you feel like are some of the keys to the game that could sway this thing one way or the other?
Quinn Ewers turnovers. They gave Georgia short fields. Heck, they gave Oklahoma a short field when he did it on their first possession. They gave Vanderbilt the two touchdowns they needed to make that a game that came down to an onside kick. So if Quinn Ewers can limit his turnovers, or, you know, you don't want any, but if you can maybe do it in opposing territory and force Florida to, no matter who's at quarterback, have to work the ball down the field. Don't give them free opportunities at 6 or 3. That'd be the big one for me.
Especially Gators coming off of back-to-back games with 3 interceptions.
Right. Special teams. Look, Texas over the past couple of years had really great special teams. A lot of that had to do with playing starters on special teams. And they still do that to an extent, but for some reason it's just not there this year. That includes at the specific specialist spots, punter, kicker. And that, apparently, just looking at some of the advanced stats, I think Florida's ahead in all those different categories. So a field position battle could be critical. And then lastly, I'm going to go with, and, you know, I always look at this, explosive plays. You know, if you got more plays of 20 plus yards, maybe one of them is going to find the end zone at some point. If not, you're going to get into scoring position when you may not have been. So, if Texas can limit explosive plays, and theoretically, you know, it's probably going to be explosive runs, that's the way Texas can really win this game. And the Longhorns can try to leverage Quinn Ewers' arm into more deep passes, the style of which Steve Sarkisian uses a lot in his offense.
Good stuff, man. Last thing before we get you out here, a lot of Florida fans are going to be coming to Austin maybe for the first time. You mentioned that you've lived there for quite a while. What recommendations can you give us for our listeners out there about maybe some, you know, go-to spots that they need to check out?
All right. So if you're staying downtown, it's the Colorado River is kind of the southern end of downtown. Texas starts, UT starts at about MLK, which numbers-wise is 19th, and then it goes all the way to about 30th. Okay. You got the freeway, Interstate 35 on the east boundary. You got the, I'd say Lamar Boulevard on the west boundary. Anywhere around there, you can find so many great things. Barbecue, I know people love. Terry Black's. It's a little bit south of the river. You're going to wait in line, but you can buy a beverage in line, and it is worth it. Tex-Mex, Friday night's going to be packed, but I got there. It's Matt's El Rancho, just one of the staple places in Austin. If not, you can go over to the east side of town, a little bit further east of I-35 on 5th Street. Cisco's, go there for pre-game breakfast, Tex-Mex breakfast. One of my favorites. Around the stadium, as far as like tailgating, it's, you know, it's a urban college in the middle, basically in the middle of a downtown area. So you'll be able to find a few different things. I do recommend, you know, checking out Longhorn City Limits, kind of an area, and just even around the stadium, cheap beverages, big screens, kind of on a place to walk. It's 75 here right now, and so I know it's not going to be much hotter. So that's a good area, but the watering holes around the stadium, I'm biggest fans of. Number one, Posse East. Number two, Haymaker. And then number three is Schultz's Beer Garden. I think if you go to any of those places, you won't go wrong. And then, and of course, it's a city of a million now. So if there are some staple like steak places or, you know, national restaurants you're interested in, those are all here. I'm trying to think the places to go out. If you want to stay out late and make that a quick turnaround, a lot of people will talk about 6th Street, which
that's
is
all I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like three different parts of 6th Street. You've got 6th Street between Congress and, oh man, I guess I would say Red River. It's touristy. I would stay there maybe until about 9:30. You've got West 6th, which is 6th Street between Lamar and, I should know this off the top of my head, but I don't. 6th Street from about Lamar to about five blocks east of that. That's a good area. Kind of almost Yo Pro-y, but not bad. And then Rainy Street, nice area. Kind of amidst high rises, but a lot of bars within old houses. I would just recommend finding the bar around the corner, because there may be some dude playing guitar there. You may find a band playing. It's the live music capital of the world. It's a good place to find any place to stumble in and out of, and then enjoy the game. It's a pretty big stadium, should have 100,000 seats, and should pretty rowdy for another SEC game.
That's awesome, man. Well, you've given them the rundown on the game and everything to do in Austin. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for this matchup. Let all the folks know where they can follow your work and check out your guys' site.
Yeah, head to Inside Texas. So if you got a Gators Online subscription, you can read all of our plus stuff. You can read our entertaining message board. All our socials are at Inside Texas, and mine's at Joseph Cook 89 on Twitter. So come check us out, come give us a read, and we'll be there for football, basketball, recruiting, anything you're looking for Longhorns wise.
Awesome. Joe, really appreciate the time. I know we probably got some listeners that are going to be happy to hear about those recommendations you gave as well. So I will see you in the press box on Saturday. Looking forward to seeing how this one plays out. And then I'll join you guys in the press box for our rapid reaction